time. This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. So the Mariners lose last night 11-1 to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Tough game for Wade LeBlanc. They got to him early. Mariners so far only scoring 5 runs since Robinson Cano's comeback. That's in 3 games. Series continues tonight against the Dodgers. And then, of course, trying 3.5 games right now. The A's have the lead in the wild card because they were able to win last night. In other news, the Seahawks cut Marcus Smith, kind of a mysterious cut. There were some personal things, I guess, going on, and they decided to part ways. We hope that everything's okay with Marcus. News today, Josh Gordon has reported and is going to report to the Cleveland Browns. He had been trying to take care of himself mentally and also try to get that right, and he thanked the Players Association, the Browns, for the support, and the Browns are welcoming him back. Bad news as far as Isaiah Wynn. He's a tackle, first-round pick of the New England Patriots. He's tore his Achilles tendon, so his season is over. And then A.J. McCarron, the starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, he suffered a broken collarbone, so now he's going to be out indefinitely. That means that Josh Allen, the first-round pick who probably needed the most time to get into the league and try to learn things, he's now going to become the starter. And, we'll see. Then maybe they'll go with Nathan Peterman. But, boy, it's a bad situation in Buffalo. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now from the Mariners broadcast is Gary Hill. And, Gary, that was a tough one last night, one that you didn't expect, 11-1.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Dodgers pack a wallop, that's for sure. And we saw it firsthand last night. Thumping home runs all over the yard, getting to Wade LeBlanc early. You knew it would be tough on the other side. Buehler, not really a household name, I think, for a lot of American League fans, but he's had a really nice rookie season. He has great stuff. He throws in the high 90s. Mariners had a chance to see that firsthand as well. The Dodgers a little weak in the bullpen, but it didn't matter last night because the Dodgers had such a big lead early on. And what's tough, if you're trying to win this series, losing the game last night, you have to get tonight, and then you're staring at Clayton Kershaw coming up on Sunday. Rich Hill is very good as well. So this is a tough 3 games, that's for sure. And then Houston coming in for 3 after this. Not easy.
Yeah, and it's strange because, I mean, the Dodgers had been in a real funk here about the last 8 or so games, and all of a sudden they got out of it pretty easily, and they also come in without Puig.
It's really what concerns you about seeing a good team not playing well when you see them, because you know at some point they're going to snap out of it. You just hope that that doesn't happen against you. And you're right, they had won the previous game in extra innings against the Giants, but they lost 5 in a row before that, and really it was their offense that struggled, which is funny because you look at their lineup up and down outside of Justin Turner, and it's just because he spent a ton of time on the DL. The least amount of home runs for any one guy in their lineup was 17. I mean, they hit a lot of home runs, especially with the additions of a couple of American League All-Stars, Dozier at second base and Machado at shortstop. They are dangerous up and down the lineup. They're a team that's going to score a ton of runs. You have to find a way to score with them as well, which is not easy against their starting rotation, especially the 3 that the Mariners are going to see. But they got to find a way tonight to get the pitch count of Rich Hill up, get into their bullpen, and try and do some damage that way.
No question. And so about the hitting still remains an issue right now. Run scoring, 5 runs so far since the return of Robinson Cano in 3 games. And, Cano's, starting to hit okay. But, you would figure that Cano's return would really start to spark things, but still it's a struggle.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think part of it is this stretch. They are facing some of the best pitching teams that they're going to see this year with the A's. And that dominant bullpen that it's not easy to score against. Mariners saw that firsthand. Of course, the Dodgers, some really strong pitching as well. And then the Astros coming in for 3 more after that. So teams that generally you're not going to score a ton of runs against anyway. So, but to me, moving forward, I think the offense is going to be a real key. We've seen some struggles in the rotation. Paxton out. We'll see how long he's on the DL. Innings kind of stacking up for Marco Gonzalez. They'll push him back a couple of days, so he's going to start Wednesday against the Astros instead of Sunday against the Dodgers. Pitch count, again, rising for LeBlanc. So there are some things cropping up in the rotation. The rotation has been outstanding all year. They've been a huge part to what the Mariners have done this season. But in my mind, moving forward this last month of change, the offense is really going to have to assert itself, score, you know, over five runs a ball game, really get going and try and propel this team into the postseason.
Yeah, and that's the weird part because, and again, you're right about the fact, yeah, when you face good pitchers and you face good pitching staffs, your run totals are going to come down. But, You know, there was that one stretch right before Cano came back where they were basically scoring almost five runs a game. It looked like they were, you know, really coming out of it, particularly when they made the move to have, Mitch Haniger leading off. But, again, the pitching staffs right now caught up a little bit to this team.
Yeah, and it's easier said than done against some of the arms that they're facing. And it did. It looked like they were on a real roll, and they were going to pop, especially with Cano coming back. But it's hard. It's hard when you face the A's, and it's going to be hard when the Astros come in as well. You just can't expect to score five runs a ball game. You have to find a way to suppress their offense with your rotation and the bullpen and then just scratch some runs across. It's what they did in Houston. It's how they swept aside the Astros in four games, which is pretty remarkable given the four starters that they faced. And they're going to have to do the same sort of thing again when the Astros come in. Who knows where the Astros will be in terms of division? They lost last night to the A's, so the A's just one game back of the Astros. And that's why this series against the Dodgers is so important, I think, if the Mariners can get a couple more wins, because they're guaranteed to gain ground on somebody. The A's and Astros are going to play the next 2 days. It's interesting to look at. I think it would behoove the Mariners if the Astros would take the next two games against the A's. I still feel like you're playing the percentages by saying the Astros will probably win the division given the rotation and when their offense gets healthy. But I don't know. This A's streak continues to last. I thought they'd slow down by now, but they really haven't. So who knows how this thing is going to turn out.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, go figure the A's. I mean, because I know they've got some real good young players, 28 years or younger, and they're really coming on at the right time. But it's almost as if, and I don't know, like you look at the pitching staff, I just wonder if they can sustain this. I mean, heck, they got Edwin Jackson in there trying to, be a regular starter. You know, but so far they have been able to sustain it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've had question marks about the rotation since day one of the season, and that's before they ended up with, you know, their opening day starter, Kendall Graveman, struggling and going in the DL. And you go down the list, they've had a lot of injury problems. Manaea has been great since the very beginning of the season, and they've just found a way to patch it together. And Edwin Jackson is probably the perfect example, and he continues to pitch really well. He's sitting around a 3 ERA, which is pretty remarkable. And at this point, with what they've done with their bullpen, they're really just asking their starters to go five, give them five quality innings, and they continue to find a way to do it. Their offense has been really good, especially away from home. They've hit a ton of home runs. Matt Chapman, to me, is one of the best players in the American League. People may think that's an overstatement, but given what he does defensively, and he took a game away from the Mariners in that series with one defensive play in a critical situation, and what he is doing offensively right now, he's in the two-hole and hitting extra base hits, doubles, home runs. He has been so good for them. In the middle of their order with Chris Davis as well, they have a lot of thump in that lineup. Their bullpen is really good. Trinan, you trail them late, you're just not going to win, and the numbers bear that out. If you're trailing them in the 8th, 9th, 7th, you're really going to struggle to get the victory. You've got to jump on them early and try and play from ahead.
And that's where you have to give Billy Beane credit because, you know, he's now following that Kansas City Royal model that you just load up the bullpen. That's what Jerry DePoto has been trying to do. You load it up as best you can so that you have the ability to shorten the game, I guess you could call it.
Mariners are in that position too. You look what Colomé has done. He's on a long, long scoreless streak. Diaz, he's having an historic season. He's been ridiculous all season long. I mean, the Mariners are in a position where they've really cut short the ball game. It's just right now getting that lead to those guys. That is the biggest key. Scoring early, it's kind of an obvious point, but that goes a long ways for this team. If they can get some runs on the board early in a ball game, that would be enormous for this team because we've seen it. The ninth and the eighth, they're locked down. They have enough arms right now to piece together the seventh as well. They can shorten games. They just have to have a lead to try and shorten the game.
What do you see a little bit? Because I know that the Scott Service tried this a little bit. Do you see a little bit more of small ball trying to come in just to try to get things started a little better?
I think we could see that. They definitely have the pieces to do it, especially with a dynamic bottom of the order, Mabin and D. Gordon down at the bottom of the order. Of course, I was kind of expecting small ball in Oakland, and then D. Gordon muscles up and it's a two-run home run. So I didn't
necessarily go figure that
one coming. Of all the scenarios that could have played out in that situation, that was not one I was thinking about, but it was quite a moment. But, yeah, they have the pieces to do that, that's for sure. I mean, really, when you're playing teams like the Astros and the A's and the Dodgers, you're just trying to find a way to score runs. You just can't always sit back and wait for a two-run home run or three-run home run. You have to find a way to push some runs across, especially in close situations. So, yeah, I think we could definitely see more of that.
What Jerry DePoto had an interesting comment the other day. They asked him, I was like, what do you think of your team? He says, I'll know better when I know that Paxton's coming back. And so I guess, you know, Paxton is such a key to this season. And I remember both them talking about it earlier this year. They needed about 25 starts out of Felix and Paxton, and they need Paxton back as quick as possible.
There is no question about that. He is so huge for this team. Oh, that made me sick to my stomach when he got hit with the line drive early in that ball game. And you never know how that game turns out if he's able to stay on the mound. Felix pitched great. He gives up the two-run home run. But, man, that was really tough to see. And you just wonder, there's really no way to know at this point how long he'll be out. It's just, it depends on how quickly he can get better. It's, you know, he got drilled. I mean, there's nothing he could do about it. It was a line shot, what, at 96 miles per hour, right back at the arm. And it's just a really unfortunate situation. But he's been so big for them all season long, eating up innings, giving them a chance to win, at times really being a dominant guy. And Jerry DePoto is absolutely right. They need him back as quickly as possible. And now they're in a situation, not only is he not going this turn, they have to find a way to plug that spot in the rotation. And they're going to have to do it on Sunday against Clayton Kershaw. That's going to be no easy task as well. So tough spot. Felix will pitch on Monday, Marco on Wednesday, but they do. It's an obvious statement, but they need him back as quickly as possible because here we are. We are just we're on the precipice of the stretch run here. It's hard to believe, but we are knocking on the door of September, and that's when the sprint really begins. You'd love to have a healthy Paxton for the entire month of September.
No question. What's it look like for Felix? Because, I mean, Felix did, in a pressure situation, come out of the bullpen, go 5 2/3, and really do some good things.
He looked really good. Even the home run he gave up against Lowry, ball was flat out to right field, and, you know, it went. But he gives up two runs and just over five innings. But what I was impressed with mostly is his location, and that's something that we've talked about quite a bit. I've said it a lot. He still has the stuff to be an effective pitcher at the big league level. When you look at the numbers of the secondary stuff with the changeup and the curveball, it's still not getting squared up. The question has been the command, especially with the fastball. And we saw some really good command against the A's, a team that can, they can go yard at any point. And I look at his very first plate appearance. He faced Chris Davis. He ended up walking Davis, but everything was where he wanted it, at the bottom of the zone, right at the kneecaps. He didn't leave anything over the plate. He didn't leave anything at the belt, and that's where he's been hurt this year. I thought he was really effective, and that was a great sign for the Mariners. And now they're in a position where, hey, he's back in the rotation, and they need him in a big ball game against the Astros coming up. I think it was a really good sign, and hopefully he can take that into the game on Monday, because that's going to be a big game in a very big series.
Oh, no question about it. And, of course, also the key is just trying to come out of this series and, you know, not fall too far behind now the A's and the Astros. And, again, just like I agree with you, I think you would rather see the Astros win, because ultimately you figure they're going to figure it out, get some guys back, get that pitching going, and probably still win the division. But you want to just make sure that you make the playoffs. And I think the A's are the team that they've got to stay with. And right now you don't want to fall 4.5, 5.5 behind.
Yeah, that feels like the percentage play to me. When you look at the Astros rotation, they're starting to get healthy offensively. Springer's back. Correa is back. Altuve is going to be back as well. And, I mean, I'm sure you talk to Mariners players, they'd like to win the division, but just kind of analyzing it from the outside, you want to pick off the team right in front of you, and right now that's the Oakland A's. So I look at it that way. You want the Astros, despite a walk-off win for the A's last night, I think as a Mariners fan, you'd like to see the Astros win the next couple of games, and maybe the Mariners can get a game or two in this Dodgers series and tighten things up. And again, there's still a lot of games left with the A's, including at the end of the next road trip, Mariners back in Oakland. So to me, just stay close. And then in September, the end of this month, you're going to have a chance to pass them on your own. You're going to have a chance to do the damage on your own and pass them. But you've got to stay in striking distance to make that happen.
No question. And then finally, what's the status now of Gene Segura?
Paternity leave, so he was out last night. It'll probably be a couple more days. So congratulations to him, by the way. Dee Gordon,
yes.
Playing shortstop. And a spot he's really familiar with. I think it was kind of funny last night to see him at shortstop against the Dodgers because he came up with the Dodgers as a shortstop. And the last time the Dodgers were at Safeco Field, which was, 2012 now. It was a while ago. But Dee Gordon was their shortstop, and he was played a prominent role in that combined no-hitters the Mariners threw against the Dodgers. But I think he'll be fine there. He was fine there last night, and I think he'll hold the fort down until Gene Segura comes back. And this is where kind of that added versatility comes into play. With Cano back, they can just kind of move some pieces around and cover up for Gene Segura being out for a couple of days, and they'll welcome him back when he is back. But it is nice to have that extra bat to move around in case a guy misses a game or two for whatever reason.
No question. Well, I know you're not going to miss the game tonight. You're going as the Dodgers. And, of course, Gary Hill, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime, John. It's fun. Can't wait for this stretch run.
Absolutely. It sounds good. Hey, Gary Hill, thank you for joining us. We are taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Just got down here to Los Angeles. Looking forward to go down to the StubHub Center and see Seahawks going against the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game. Based on last week's performance, what are some of your bold predictions going into the season?
Well, I think I still think that they're a team that can win between 8 and 10 games. Clearly, I think now you start to forecast, and we'll see if it continues, that, more of the younger guys who are, maybe on more scholarship than anything else may get more playing time than anticipated. I think that's one thing. I mean, you saw great stuff from Rasheem Green. I think you see, Shaquem Griffin do a lot of good things. And I think that, he's, angling for maybe a chance to play a little bit of big nickel in time, initially you thought, okay, all he's going to be doing is just going out there and just playing special teams. He may have a bigger role than that as time goes on. Still like what I see of Barkevius Mingo. I mean, he's still working on a few things, but I like what I see there. So, I'm really impressed, at least in practice, with Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall's really doing some good things in practice. Now we'll see if he can carry it over into the game.
Yeah. I agree. I think I like the kicker. I'm interested to see about Michael Dixon because John Ryan's good too, but Michael Dixon's got like 7 kicks and a drop kick. The only place I'm concerned about with him is he's a rookie and it's field goal kicking because placing the ball is very important because
no
the
question.
Kicker's on you very fast. That's where I think John Ryan has the edge, too. But I think they could work on it with him. And if not, I guess you could put Austin Davis in there. But that's the last scenario you want to see.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think, but you got such rare talent in Michael Dixon. I mean, what, in college, I think he had a 47.3 net. Last week, he's 47.3. I mean, that's remarkable. And then the thing is, his ball is so hard to catch. I mean, twice the ball kind of hit the ground and all that when, he was out there. So, yeah, there's something special about him. That's why, we'll see how it goes as far as the holding and all that stuff. I mean, so far, it's been pretty good. He hasn't had too much trouble. I mean, it's a little bit more difficult for him to hold for Sebastian Janikowski because you're not used to holding for a left-handed, but left-footed kicker. But hey, we're seeing good things so far.
What do you think of the offensive line? Do you see Wesley Wilson having a lot more time, like him less running around out there and passing
yes.
more in the pocket?
Yeah, I think the scheme fits the bodies better, because I think you're seeing, better pass blocking. Certainly you're seeing better run blocking. I think that's encouraging. So, it's just a matter that, Jermaine Ifedi has to, get some things going better. I think that's going to be, one of the critical things. So, but I think, the left side really looks good right now. Dwayne Brown and Ethan Posick think that they're really doing some really good stuff.
Yeah, I've always liked Ethan Posick. He reminded me of Wesley Wilson and Tyler Lockett as a rookie by just being ahead of his years. Like when in the Minnesota game when the ball got snapped over Russell's head, Tyler was a rookie then, and he just stood where he was opened and just waited for the ball to be passed to him. Like, Ethan Posick knows what he's doing. The game doesn't ever speed up on him.
No, he's a real smart player. I think you can see that. Again, he played center in college, and if necessary, he can play center. But he seems to be a good technician. Really does pay good attention to detail, and that's real good. So no, I think that he's a good one, and that's the left side. And Justin Britt is a Pro Bowl caliber center, so I think they're okay there.
Yeah, I think they'll rely on Russell and him to scheme up against the defense a little bit, like for him to call out things more. And I like the chemistry between both of them. They're both quiet leaders, which is what the team's turning into.
No question. Hey, Tara, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bill in Seattle. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, hey, John. Nice talking to you. I had a question. Besides being a Seahawks fan, I'm also a big college football fan. Hey, how mm-hmm. much time do you have, to follow the college teams, the conferences, to do a lot of reading, studying on these college teams, or does the pro game have to take up all your time?
It doesn't take up all my time. I try to stay up on it as best I can. One thing that makes it a little bit more difficult is a lot of times, like every other week or so, I'm flying to a game, and so I don't get a chance, unless the plane has TV, to be able to watch all that. But no, I try to follow it as best I can. I mean, I go back and, I don't do this now. I used to. I used to do the recruiting stuff for the News Tribune, college football recruiting and college basketball recruiting. I used to do that. I used to do it for the Pittsburgh Press. And so, I kind of miss that. And wish I could spend more time kind of, breaking teams down by, what they have as far as their recruits and that. But, sometimes there's only so much time in the day that you have.
And just one quick thing, too. One reason why I love the college game, especially before the conference action starts, these matchups, there are fascinating matchups, John. Like, quickly, Boise State is going to be at Oklahoma State. Northern Illinois Huskies will be at Utah Utes. I mean, some of these great matchups that are just fascinating to watch and to read the different stadiums they have and kind of the mm-hmm. spirit of college football. It's just a wonderful game.
Oh, it really is. And, it's one where, I mean, you can see that, particularly, you can get good previews on teams. I know, like, I talk to Phil Steele every year and love his preview stuff and all that. But again, what I like is in the last couple of years is that, they're putting better games up earlier. I mean, like, for example, last year, you look at the first week of the college season, there were more good quality games than there normally would be where, like in the SEC, you would have too many, teams just playing puffies and just, having those bad teams get big paydays and all that. But now I think that there's a, better scheduling early, which I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. Well, do you personally have any, you know, any teams that you follow on a personal level that you just are a big fan of?
No, because I can't be a fan, unfortunately. I can be a fan of the sport, but I can't really be a fan of the team because I got to, you know, be objective in what it is. And so, whether it's pro or anything else, I mean, the only team I can be a fan of, and that's going to end in 2 years, is the Penguin hockey team in Pittsburgh because there's no hockey team here. Once there's a hockey team here, then I have to remain neutral. And that's the reporter in me that has always been the case.
Sounds good. Hey, thanks very much, John, and thanks for your contribution here in our Seattle market. You're just a real treasure to have in our market.
Hey, Bill, thank you for the comment. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Well, I think I slowly see myself seeping back towards a Prozac prescription. I think the Jets are what they are, and they're not going to be anything more than that this year, and we're building for 2019.
Yep, I would agree. It's not a this year team.
You know, the problems are still there. They cannot generate a pass rush, and that's a huge problem for that defense. And unless and until they can solve that problem, they're going to have problems on defense. I don't care how good, I think their defensive backfield is good. But until they can start getting some pressure on the quarterback consistently, they're going to have a problem. And they're not going to be able to fix that, I'm afraid. The other problem on offense is, they've neglected that line. They've tried to put blowout patches on. They've got one of the top five most expensive offensive lines in the NFL, and they stink. They flat out stink. I mean, I thought Long played pretty well, the center from the Redskins that they got. I thought Shell has been playing pretty well. But other than that, the starters are just, you know, what starters are left, that'd be Carpenter. He doesn't fit the system. I'm sorry. He just looks helpless out there.
Right.
And I really, that's just a flat-out mismatch. And he's going to struggle all year if they're going to keep him there and use this system. We talked about that months ago, and it's reached fruition. And I don't understand, as much as I like what McKagan's been doing over the last 3 years, and I think they're on borrowed time last year, and they caught, you know, lightning in a bottle with Beecham being able to play a full season and played well. He wasn't a problem. But, you know, to expect that he's going to be able to play another full 16 games, you know, not that he's not good, it's just he's not healthy. And hasn't been consistently healthy in the last 5 years. And they didn't do anything to put a backup plan together. I'm sorry, Quale is not the answer. Aijalana, who's hurt, is not the answer. You know, and now, you know, Beecham's done. I don't know if he's going to be able to play for the regular season. Who are you going to put there?
What is his injury?
Beecham.
What? Yeah,
he's got something.
Well,
what's his
injury?
Yeah,
foot?
I don't know if it's a stress fracture or what it is, but all I keep saying is a foot.
Right.
So fortunately, it's not a knee problem again, which is a good thing. But I don't. They keep saying it's a foot. I don't know what the problem is specifically. So you know, unless and until he can come back, that offensive line's got no hope. And they talk about, ooh, I hope Darnold start. Everybody's, you know, fixated on Darnold starting, or what are they going to do with Bridgewater or this other stuff. No, no, no. I don't care who's behind the wheel. They're going to get killed, you know.
Right.
And in my take, I'd better it's McNown than Darnold. But you know, I at the rate it's going right now, I definitely don't want Darnold behind the wheel of that vehicle the first 4 weeks.
Well, and of course it goes. Sometimes there's unfair criticism. You know, for example, one of the things that McKagan is getting beaten up for is that he doesn't draft offensive linemen. Well, when you're trying to fix up the defense and get athletic on defense, you know, drafting to the secondary, drafting to the linebacking core. I mean, you can't put a first, second, or third round pick on an offensive lineman. I mean, again, he's had to try to redo just about everything here, and you know they're better athletically on defense, but they are thin and terrible on the offensive line.
John, I fully agree with you on that, and you can't draft what's not there. You know, and I think he's done a good job of not pushing the drafts, drafting for need instead of drafting for talent, and it's been an excruciatingly slow process, but I think he's been wise in doing that. And I think he's got himself a particularly good draft class this year. But
right.
I will take umbrage with you on this point, and it still really chaps me. 2 years ago, all right, he was being cute. All right, third round, Elfline, sitting right there, plug and play, 10-year center from Ohio State. Mangold's gone, bring in Elfline, get him some experience. By the time your new quarterback comes in, your rookie quarterback comes in, he'll have a year or two under his belt. What does he do? He gets cute. All right, he trades the pick directly to Minnesota. What does Minnesota do? They use that pick specifically for Elfline. Okay, mm-hmm, what does McCaslin mm-hmm. do later in the third round? Because he moved down and then he picked up a fourth round. He takes Ardarius Stewart and then he takes Chad Hansen. Oh, gee, there's no other Ardarius Stewarts or Chad Hansens, you know, in that draft? Or they can't find him on the free agent wire? You gave up the opportunity to have a 10-year center. And you know, then they were going to go with Wesley Johnson as their starting center to add insult to injury. So mm-hmm. I do take umbrage with you in that regard. He was, you know, why he went with Ardarius Stewart and Hansen instead of having the chance to pick up Elfline is I think, short-sighted on my part, on his part, and that's why I will take umbrage with you. But other than that, I don't have any problems with it. I think he did a nice job, you know, picking up an extra pick, moving up and taking Shell. I think Shell's developing into a decent right tackle. So
right.
I've been watching him develop the last 3 years. I think he's going to be a solid NFL player. So I think he's done a good job with that one. But, you know, the problem was they got old, and the prior regime, they drafted offensive linemen, but the guys they drafted, you know, stink. And so he's left with a bunch of bums. All they've got left is Dakota Dozier, and they're trying to figure out a place for him. You know, he's got to step up. This is his fourth year. You know, they got to get some mileage out of him, and he doesn't look that solid out there. You know, so I don't know if part of the problem is they're trying to adjust and adapt to a new system, which may be part of the problem, and I can understand that. The other problem is they're mixing and matching these guys at the speed of light, and as you well know, out of all the units in football, the unit that has to have the most cohesion is your offensive line. That's all about timing. It's all about discipline, mm-hmm. and you only get that one way. And that's by, you know, playing together. You're not going to get it in practice. And here, they're mixing and matching at such speeds. It's like, I don't know how they're going to develop any cohesion. So I'm really concerned about that offensive line, more so than I even was.
Yeah, I think you should be. Now, who Teddy Bridgewater did some good things. How do you think they sort that out as far as the rotation at quarterback? Do they trade Bridgewater? Or how do you see that going down?
You know, I wanted him to draft Bridgewater when he came out of the draft. I really liked him in Louisville. I like him now. You know, I wouldn't be upset with him being my quarterback for the next 10 years. So, you know, but again, I understand he's only signed for 1 year. You know, he was as a backup policy, and I understand Darnold's your future, you know. But boy, I quite frankly, at this point, I'd like to see Bridgewater as my starting quarterback in week one. Now, how is going to sort itself out? Obviously, they're going to shop him. You know, I think Darnold's far enough along. You know, he's going to be playing, you know, I suspect two-thirds of the season. And he should. So that means you're going to, you know, ride with McNown because you're paying him $10 million, and, you know, that's your plan. And I don't think Bridgewater just fits into the plan, but it's just the Jets' luck that, you know, they go from, you know, feast to famine, or famine to feast, I should say, and that this is the first year. I mean, can you imagine if they had Bridgewater the last three, you know, a healthy Bridgewater the last 3-4 years? It's just too bad, but it's just the Jets' luck. But I think they're going to move him, and whoever gets him is going to get a, you know, a really good quarterback, and he's going to make a lot of money next year. I think
that's
got to happen, John. I mean, they're
set
up. Yeah,
I think that. But he does look good. I think you have to give him credit. He's bounced back pretty well. And, I mean, he's been the best looking of the quarterbacks so far.
Well, not just best looking. He's been looking good.
I agree.
You know, not just by Jet standards, but by NFL standards.
So,
you know, I think he's been looking real good. And he's, you know, he's been running around. But, you know, the only thing I can say is he really hasn't played against first-string talent. But I don't think that's going to be as big a problem for him because, you know, he's been there before.
Exactly.
But I like him. And, geez, he's got a wonderful chemistry with Johnson. I mean, it's like those two are reading each other's minds. Obviously, they've played together, and that's been working really well. But, you know, and I'm happy for him because he's been through heck, it's good to see good things happen to him. I don't know. Hopefully, you know, there's going to be a market opening up in the first couple weeks, and then they deal him. The only thing I'm concerned about is at this point is, let's not be in too much of a hurry because, you know, what happened in Buffalo could certainly happen anytime in with the Jets. I mean, if
no question.
McMillan, you know, gets dumped on his head and, you know, separates a shoulder or something, well, and then you're left just with Darnold, well, now you got yourself a bit of a problem as well. So let the situation play out a few more weeks. You got about, what, 4 weeks, I figure? You know, 2 more weeks of preseason.
Pretty much,
and
yeah.
Perhaps the first couple weeks of the regular season for Bridgewater to maintain full value or perhaps even gain more value as time goes on and see what happens. But I'd really love to see them at the very least pick up another second round pick to replace the one they gave up last year.
Well, we'll see. So stay tuned. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Take care, John. Talk to you next week.
Okay, Jed. Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Amir. Amir, how are you?
All right, brother. How you doing today?
I'm doing good.
All right, so I'm hearing stuff, man. Let me know, John, how serious is it, man? Mac to the Packers. How real is it?
So, not happening. I don't see it. I mean, you know, I don't think they can generate. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to do it. Now, they need a pass rush. We all know that. But I think it's just going to be very difficult because, number one, I mean, you have to give up a lot. You're probably going to have to give up 1 and a 3 and maybe something else. Secondly, you have to try to get a deal done. And, you know, they have the cap room to be able to do it. I mean, well, actually, they don't technically. They got 10.5 under the cap. So they're going to have to do some juggling on that regard. But I'd say it's not going to be real. Sorry.
Oh, man. That, you know, if that was to happen, he could just, the next couple of years, you know, it'd be locked out. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah, because, again, you're talking about one of the best defensive players in football.
I mean, you got to do it, man. You got to take a shot. Rodgers ain't getting younger, you know. The league, I mean, the Rams, the Vikings, you know, the NFC is stacked. I mean, you put him on our team, man. That changes.
Oh, maybe. But see, here's where the issue is, and I know Mike Pettine can change this and adjust it and all that stuff. Yeah, I just feel better with Mac in a 4-3 defense than a 3-4.
Yeah.
And so if they would make the adjustment, because I think they would get better value for him and better use of him if they go to a 3-4. So now what you're talking about is junking the 3-4, making a trade, costing $20 million at a time when you're also negotiating with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
the odds just aren't there, Amir. I'm sorry.
If you get Rodgers Mac, I think he's going to give you a little bit of a discount.
I don't know about that. It's going to cost $20 million.
Yeah, well, we're dreaming over here, man. You know, we're dreaming.
Yeah, I know. You are identifying one of the big issues, and that's, you know, pass rush.
Most definitely. So, you know, if it was me personally, I would take the risk, man. You got to do it, you know, just for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some financial complications and, like you said, you have to give up a lot. I mean, he's worth it, man. It's a once-in-a-generation lifetime player. You know what I'm saying? It's a pairing
right
with Rodgers and the team. I just think, man, you got to go for it.
Unfortunately, don't see it happening.
All right, Mr. Clayton. I appreciate it.
Hey,
man.
Thank you so much,
one.
Amir. Same to you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dre. Dre, how are you?
Well, you know, the 5-2 sports fan has to check in, whose vocals hit a little bit harder than the former Punch and Judy and retired 12-year Santa Clara University outfielder Randy Wynn. It's the voice that bends and never breaks. You know, John, that keeps it real and never fake. And I just heard you talk about you have to stay objective to that caller. But it didn't come. You didn't stay objective when it was time to vote for T.O. And on the first ballot, John, that wasn't a personal vendetta. 156 career touchdowns.
That wasn't a vendetta.
A personal.
Let's put it this way. There's 48 votes in the room, and he didn't come close.
Terrell Davis.
And who in the last 2 years has pitched him hard? And that would be me.
Yeah,
pitched him to get into the Hall of Fame.
But not on the first ballot. Don't worry. He's going to get in, man. Don't worry. He's going to get in. But, hey, he should have got in the first
he
ballot.
Did.
And don't get mad at him for what he did, because you guys created that from not putting him in on the first ballot when he deserved the first ballot, saying he was like, I had a Ty Cobb mentality or mindset to a certain extent to his teammates. And Ty Cobb probably was the worst maybe baseball player as a teammate in history when it came to sports.
From the 49er organization did you hear them complaining about him not being in the first ballot? How did you see anybody from the 49er organization stepping forward and wanting to be with him at the Hall of Fame?
How many people complain about you putting a guy who only had good 4-year career into the Hall of Fame as Terrell Davis, and his last 3 years was horrible? How many people complain about that? A lot, because Terrell Davis shouldn't have been in the Hall of Fame, and let's say he was in the crowd instead of having a yellow jacket. We all know that.
It took him 13 years to get into the Hall of Fame.
But still, he should have never been in there. He had a career of only four years, a limited time, I'm not drinking a bottle of wine, but a limited time when it came to Terrell Davis, and he shouldn't be in there when a lot of other running backs that put in their time, 10 or 12, 11 years, should be in there. Well, let's switch gears. Because we have
yes. the Seattle. But by the way, I'm not arguing with you on that one. It's like that was a borderline one on me.
Yeah, okay. But let's switch gears real quick. When I was talking about remember we were talking about back when the Mariners were playing the Red Sox, and we're talking about contract extensions way back when it was Scott Disservice and Mr. Jerry DePoto. I said they need to hold on and wait and do that because, there's a long rest of the season to go. And I think that Scott Disservice and Jerry DePoto got ahead of themselves, and there were 11 games up in the wild card. And, they kept on talking about, when we get to the playoffs and this and that, and they got ahead of themselves. Well, guess what? When you get ahead of yourselves, when still 4 months or 3 months left to go in the season, there's going to be a team out there that's going to catch you. And that team either was going to be the Angels or the Oakland A's were going to get hot. Somebody gets going to get it hot. And then all of a sudden you forget and start saying, well, if this you got Mariner fans saying, well, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, they're going to blame Robinson Cano. No, you might have to blame Jerry DePoto for not getting any starting pitching during this trading deadline. He still has a chance to get starting pitching because it looks like it could happen because you don't know who's coming back or who might come back. James Paxton needs to come back either at Arizona against the Diamondbacks or the following series at San Diego, or they're going to be in trouble. Alinas is a guy that it's a bad thing that he's hurt right now because that's the guy they could put in at a spot start here and there. Now you count on Rossmore Ramirez today. Marco Gonzalez has hit a lot of innings. He's basically almost hit a wall. 142 innings, John. He's going farther than he's ever been before. Same with Wade LeBlanc. I don't think he's a starting pitcher, everyday pitcher now. He's hit a wall. 122 innings, John. And this guy, maybe a guy you could start for you like 10, 11 games a year, but now he's hitting a wall. You can't be going into the third inning, second inning, down 3-4-0. That can't happen. Well, now it's starting to happen, and you're relying on your team to catch up. Don't wait 1 month, Scott Disservice. In the month of July, wait for the whole month when your team offense is horrible. And then all of a sudden you want to change the lineup. No, change the lineup after 2 weeks. Don't change the lineup after a month. You might need to change the lineup tonight and have D. Gordon back at the top, Mitch Haniger batting into Cano, then Cruz, then maybe Seager, or maybe Denard Span, because Seager has been messing up at third base, making a lot of routine errors at third base, mental blunders also at third base. So you could see Cano playing third base here and there every once in a while and give him a breather, because now these guys are starting to get tired. They're starting to hit a wall. It's going to take 95 wins at least to make that second wild card. It's going to take 103, 105 to win the AL West, John, clearly and simple. And tonight, and when it comes to the field that you're going to be at, I need to see a running game. I told you a couple years ago, they need to find a running back that can create something out of nothing like Marshawn Lynch did. They haven't found that running back yet. Could it be Chris Carson? We wait and see. Could it be Procise if he can stay healthy? But I think Chris Carson is a guy who can make something out of nothing, and that's what they need to have in the first and second quarter. They need to generate some offense from the running game. If they don't, they're going to be in trouble. 427 yards rushing. Mr. Russell Wilson will have this year 4,200 yards passing. He will 28 touchdowns. They start off the season 0-2 on the road. They're going to finish 7-9. They start off the season 2-0. They're going to finish 9-7 or 10-6. John.
Great point on that. Hey, got to run, Dre. Thank you for the phone call. Let's go quickly to Irish Mankey. We're up against the clock. Irish, how are you?
Hey, fantastic, Mr. Clayton. How about Kaiser against the Steelers? Pretty good. 7-12, 2 TDs, 149 yards. Mr. Clayton, you sound fantastic today on the radio. Must be that sunshine down there in SoCal, huh?
We'll see. I mean, catch a 5 o'clock flight. You're not seeing too much sunshine, but at least it's there. And, hey, just having fun.
Yeah. Are you working the sidelines or are you down the reporting?
Yes. Yeah, I'm doing the Charger sidelines.
Oh, fantastic. You know, Mr. Clayton, we've got a whole bunch of, announcers starting noon here. Notre Dame's replaced their old announcers, and yet, as of yet, they haven't announced who they're going to be. You've got the Raiders, who I thought were brilliant with replacing their announcing team with Munsterer and Kennedy.
Yeah, but I like Greg Papa. Greg Papa is the voice of the Raiders.
I understand. Who are the Huskies? You know, nobody lasts forever, Mr. Clayton.
That's right. Hey, but I'm up against it. So we have Eric Williams coming up to talk about the Chargers. Irish, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Eric Williams from ESPN.com next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.